Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Replaced by Irvins, and he's the lone running back. Griffin is back to throw it. Going deep. Touchdown, Redskins, Clark. From 30 yards away, it's Rippon.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, welcome back, and thanks for making the show part of our day, part of your day. We appreciate you guys being with us. I want to talk about the free agents Washington football team has this offseason. It's a longer list than you think, and there are a bunch of important names on that list beyond just a couple of the big ones you keep hearing about. We'll get into that coming up at 5:25. But right now, let's go to the BetQL guest hotline. We got an appointment. As we told you, we are celebrating the 30-year anniversary today of the 91 Redskins, arguably the greatest NFL team in history, winning the Super Bowl 30 years ago today to start the 92 calendar year. And Mark Schlereth, who you've watched for so many years on ESPN, now calling games on Fox as one of the lead analysts in the country on the NFL. He started his career here in Washington, was an interior lineman on that team that won that Super Bowl before he went on to win a couple of more in Denver, and he's a multi-time Pro Bowler. Mark, we're G&D here in D.C. Thanks for the time. How you been?
I've been great, man. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We certainly appreciate the time. Mark, let's go back to that 91 team as it gets formed. I think it's your third year in Washington. Part of that elite offensive line that had already accomplished so much going back into the 80s and now in the start of the early 90s. Just go through that experience a little bit and kind of getting up to speed with those stars.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. And I think one of the big things about just playing on that team is from a leadership standpoint, from a culture standpoint, that team was all about business, right? It was all about that. And it was always fun. Don't get me wrong. But it was about going out there and producing, going out there, working hard for each other, doing all those things that you do that produce great football teams. But it was never one of those things where, you know, you were looked at like a rookie or you were hazed or you like, man, I got my first start midway through the season of the 89 season as a rookie. And I mean, I was always welcomed, always taken in, always part of that group. The Hogs just kind of automatically adopted me, and that whole thing was the first time I got a start, man. It was Bostic taking me up, studying film, Grimmie doing it, Jacoby doing it. Like, we're all in this thing together. We're going to play great because that's what we do, and there's a standard that we play to. And, well, I tell you what, as scared as I was of the Philadelphia Eagles' number one defense, I was more scared of letting those guys down. And not playing up to the standard that had been created in regards to the Hogs. So, you know, that was just kind of the way that team operated.
What should we take out of the success of that line through the years? Maybe bigger picture, that team. You know, you were a 10th round pick. Jacoby was undrafted. And I know you could say it's different line, skill position, quarterbacks, whatever. But they won three titles with three different QBs, which seems like something that'll never happen again. But just as it pertains to culture, like what you're talking about, relationships, coaching versus, you know, guys that were drafted at the top of the board and just talent.
Yeah, obviously you've got to be good. You got to be a talented player. You've got to have all those things. And those things are great, but the bottom line, it's something that Joe Gibbs used to say, it always stuck with me, that talent would make plays in the first three quarters, but character men would win a game in the fourth quarter. And it really was it really was about the character with which you prepared with, and how you played the game. I mean, you know, we were reminiscing. We had a 30-year reunion of Super Bowl 26, and Joe Gibbs was on the call, and Charlie Casserly, and probably 20 former players on that Zoom call. It was awesome, man. We told stories for 2 hours. It was so much fun to talk about it. But just the way we practiced, I mean, the games, you got into the game was easy compared to the way we practiced. We just beat the snot out of each other. And it was, you know, it was physical, it was short, it was quick, it was, you know, full speed. And it was one of those things. It was just a different mentality. And, you know, you would watch. I remember my very first training camp in 1989, and we go into one-on-one run drill first, and it's Joe Jacoby versus Dexter Manley. Mm. And the sound that hit made with those two going after each other, just the sound. I was standing there watching it. I remember like it was yesterday. I was like, I literally was like, I don't know that I belong here. I've never heard that before. Like, I mean, I played, you know, I didn't play big time college football. I was at the University of Idaho. I was a little school, but you know, high school football through college. I got into that first training camp and I was like, oh my Lord, this is a different game. It's a completely different game. But that's the way those guys practiced, man. They practiced like that. There was a standard that Joe Gibbs demanded. There was a standard that we held each other to. And I mean, it was an all-out battle every day at practice, every day. And, you know, Joe Gibbs told the story about John Madden when we were preparing for Super Bowl 26. And John Madden came to our Thursday practice. Now, we did training camp practices that first week as we were preparing. We did no game planning. And then we game planned Wednesday, and we did Wednesday practice, Thursday practice. And we were literally destroying each other on Thursday. It was so physical. Brian Mitchell was fighting with the defense. I mean, we were going like fist to cuffs, pulling people off each other. It was crazy. And John Madden turned to his broadcast crew. Joe Gibbs was standing there. He goes, the Buffalo Bills don't stand a chance. They're going to get destroyed watching us practice on Thursday. I mean, that's the intensity with which, you know, we practice the game with. And I tell you what, it is a pretty special group. There's no question about that.
Mark Schlereth coming up to join us here on the 30th anniversary of Washington beating those Buffalo Bills 37-24 in the Super Bowl. Mark, you know, lots of teams got off to pretty good starts, right? I think of the Houston Oilers, I think, were undefeated when you guys played them. There are a couple other teams that got off to hot starts. When did you know this wasn't just a hot start? When did you know we are truly special and this is different than being pretty good, which you guys were the previous couple years?
Yeah, I think you start getting to, you know, 6-0 and you got a couple of shutouts in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you're just running through people and physically just dominating people. And your quarterback, like, they don't even need to wash your quarterback's jersey after a game. It's everything is so clean. And, you know, it was one of those situations where you're like, this team is pretty doggone good. And you know, I always felt like, you know, one of the things we talked about was just how we're going to physically take it to people. And we have an identity and this is what we do. And I am a believer in that to this day, is that you have to know who you are and what you want to be about come Sunday. And you have to have the ability and the mindset to impose your will on other teams. And we had that. I mean, we had that to the nth degree. I mean, we just came out there and said, accept your butt whipping, because that's what's going to happen today. It reminds me of one of my favorite stupid movies. I love stupid movies. You know, and one of my favorites is Dodgeball. It reminds me of White Goodman, you know, from Globo Gym. We're better than you, and we know it.
We know it.
And that's like, yeah, that's just how we walk down the field. We're like, we're better than you, and we know it. and you're just going to accept this butt whipping today, and then we'll move along. We'll move along the way to the next weekend. So that's just kind of how we operated.
Yeah, just looking at the games log, you're seeing some 56-17 wins, 34 nothings. You mentioned it. Three shutouts in the first three game, first five games of that year kind of told you everything you needed to know. One of the characters, so to speak, in this novel that is the history of this team is RFK Stadium. And now they're looking for a new stadium. We here would love it to be at the RFK site. For a lot of reasons, that probably isn't going to happen. But now they're talking to Virginia, Maryland. And the stadium now is, I'm sure you've been there calling games, is nowhere near where RFK was in terms of the importance in people's hearts. What do you remember about that stadium?
It was great. I mean, it wasn't big. It was 55,000 people. But they were on top of you. And, you know, when we got rolling, man, those stands would just be, they'd be up and down and the fans are jumping. And there were times you'd look around and you're just going, this whole stadium's going to collapse. Like, it's just going to fall down. And it was just, I mean, we just had we had a great thing coming out of those dugouts, you know, the tunnel, going down the tunnel and coming out of those dugouts. And just the way the people responded and seeing the Hoggets out there and all people decked out in their gear and just the support we got as a football team, as a community, how everybody was so connected to that team. It was a really cool experience. You know, it's funny. I was doing a game early this season. And so we went up to Ashburn to meet with the team. So we're driving up to Ashburn. We're driving up 66. You know, we stayed downtown. And we're driving up 66, me and the broadcast crew. And I literally got chills. And I took a video and I sent it to my wife. Because I'm like, I just had the flashback of me and you driving back from a game. Like, this is the route we took, you know, and it was a whole video, and it just brought me right back to those, you know, those glorious times, those glory years of, for me, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah, it's what we're celebrating all day today. Mark Schlereth joins us here on G&D. Mark, I want to ask you about Detroit quickly. You guys opened the year with a 45-0 ass-whooping of Detroit. This isn't Detroit now.
Yeah.
This is Detroit then. 12-4 with Wayne Fonts as the head coach. They beat Dallas in the divisional round, an 11-win team of their own right, 38-6. And then you guys had the rematch. I remember leading up to the rematch. Well, this time we got Barry Sanders. I don't think he played in that first one. And you guys beat him 41-10. Again, a combined 86-10 against the 12-4 Detroit Lions that year. Walk me through that. And then once you got through that, what was sort of the vibe leading up to a Bills team that was also pretty good?
Yeah, I mean the Detroit thing is like we beat them, we shut them out in week one, and we're like, really? This is the team we're getting the NFC Championship?
Yeah.
Like, they don't got a chance. And you know, they were a good team. Don't get me wrong. I think the first play of the game, Charles Mann got a sack, strip sack, fumble. You know, we get the ball on the 12 or whatever it was. You know, the 18 yard or whatever it was. You know, and you're just like, oh, this game's over. You know, first play of the game, over. That's that. So, yeah, that was an absolute dismantling. And, you know, we were like, we could do anything against them from offensively is the way I think about it is, we're going to, even though they had good players, you know, and they had, you know, Chris Spielman, who's a great player. They had Jerry Ball, who's a great player. But they just didn't match us very well. And we were so physical, and we knew they couldn't rush the passer against us. And it was like, we are just going to have our way, which obviously we did. So that was that. And then going into the Super Bowl, I tell you, you know, it's interesting. I've only had really one euphoric moment when as a player, and that was when I was with Denver winning Super Bowl 32. And that was against the Green Bay Packers simply because we were, at, you know, the start of the week, we were 13 point underdogs. I think we went off at 11.5 point underdogs in that game. And that was euphoric because of, you know, you knew the history back then. You didn't grow up, you know, learning football from Madden football, you know, video games. You learned it because you watched it and you were passionate about it. And watching, you know, John Elway get crushed in three previous Super Bowls and knowing the history, that was a euphoric moment for me. Super Bowl 26 is as great as it was to win, as joyous it was to win. It was more relief than it was joy, because you knew you were way better than them. You knew you were going to put it on them. You knew, like, hey, I know they're the Buffalo Bills, and, you know, Jim Kelly is awesome, and their offense is great with Thurman Thomas. We're going to destroy them. You know, you just knew it. And so there's that pressure on you. I felt the same way about beating Atlanta in Super Bowl 33. It was just more relief than it was anything else. But there was a euphoria for me in Super Bowl 32. But, like, you know, being that big a favorite and knowing how much better you are than everybody else, there is that pressure of, like, anything less than a victory. If we lose this game, it's going to be the most disappointing season ever. It's got to be like the Patriots in 2007 that went 18-1, and the one they lost was the one loss they had was the Super Bowl. That's a miserable season, and you just knew, hey man, if we don't win this, this is going to be miserable.
Mark Schlereth on Grant and Danny. Let's end it here. I want to get one quick take from you. Unlike the guests we're having on reminiscing today from your team, you're the one guy still broadcasting, covering the league. And I want to know what you think about Conference Championship Sunday coming up. Bengals, 49ers are the underdogs, the likes of which you were just talking about. Maybe not to the extent of the Broncos in that game with the Packers. But do you think either of them is live this weekend? Do you think Cincinnati can be frisky with the Chiefs after that superhero matchup of quarterbacks? And what about San Fran trying to beat the Rams for a third time?
Yeah, I think ultimately, like, Cincinnati, this is another thing we talked about on our Zoom call. I think the thing was, we gave up in 1991 in nine games, we gave up seven sacks. Cincinnati gave up nine sacks in that divisional playoff game. Like, how? Like, how do you win that game? That was incredible that you could even win that game based upon that situation. So, like, I really think, hey, Cincinnati, it's a great story. Joe Burrow, tip of the cap, man. He is he's special. But I happen to think that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to run him out of the building this weekend. And they're offensively, they're just so dynamic and so skilled. And then I think on the other game, San Francisco matches up really well against Los Angeles. Kyle Shanahan is an unbelievable orchestrator of offense. I'm not going to call him a play caller. I'm going to call him offensive, like a. I'm going to call him a game designer and a. Just calling of an offense, not just calling plays, but he calls an offense. He sets things up, and I think one of the things that he does better than anybody else is he mitigates potential disasters. So you may see a matchup that you love, but if it exposes you somewhere, he won't attack that matchup. If it exposes your tackle or exposes your guard or exposes somebody, he'll just be like, nah, we can't go that direction. I'll design something else. I'll create something else. So instead of just attacking somebody's weakness, he first mitigates his own weaknesses, and then he attacks the opponent. And I think he does a tremendous job with that. That said, I think the Rams are so unbelievably gifted. I think Aaron Donald is the best player in the National Football League. I think the chasm between the next best defensive tackle and Aaron Donald is the biggest chasm of any position in the league, from quarterbacks to wide receivers to whatever. He gives me, I don't even play, I'm old and broken, and he gives me nightmares just thinking about how you would try to block that guy. So the way they run the ball, they'll mitigate some of those things, but I think the Rams are just that talented. They're playing hot right now. I think it's the Rams over the Niners, and I think it's Kansas City. And to me, what's going to be a double-digit win by Kansas City.
Mark, this was awesome, man. It was a real treat. Appreciate you spending so much time with us reminiscing, buddy. Thank you so much.
You got it. It was my pleasure. Be well. Take care.
Thanks,
Mark. This is Mark Schlereth, part of the 91 Washington Redskins team that won that Super Bowl in early 92. That's my lean, by the way, as far as the two games right now. I think a lot of people feel that way. Chalky. But the Chiefs and the Rams, I just have a hard time seeing the 49ers knocking them off for a third time. I mentioned that there are a bunch of free agents on this Washington football team this year that no one's talking about, who are important to bring back, I think. We're going to run through the list next on G&D.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Little pump fake, and now a throw to from McKissick down the sideline. McKissick out of bounds.
J.D. McKissick made a lot of plays for Washington this year, and you could trace their offensive passing game changing for the worse back to really when he was no longer available. Welcome back, G&D on the Fan. He is one of the many free agents for the football team. Now, I have a full list that we can run through. I'm making it a little bit more radio-proof, if you will. I'm ignoring a bunch of the names people either aren't familiar with or aren't going to miss if they're gone, with all due respect. And so I've got really two lists that I put together. Guys that I think are pretty important, have done some good things, and I'd like to see kept. And then other guys that it would be nice if they were around. You're going to have to replace them if not, because they do some important work for you. Mm-hmm. But if they leave, it's not the end of the world. So I wanted to do this exercise because I just think, Danny, that the assumption is, well, Washington's got to figure out quarterback. But, you know, Brandon Scherff leaves, frees up some space maybe. They're going to be fine. They're losing a lot. Mm-hmm. Last offseason, as an example, they didn't have a ton of pressing issues in free agency. So here's the list I'm going to rattle off for you. This is the guys that I would say play decent roles and are either important right now or are young enough and up and coming enough with potential that I would be upset if they left. Tim Settle, defensive tackle. Now, you've got Allen, who you've paid massive money to. Payne, I don't think they're going to pay, but he is going into what is now his final year of
his
contract.
The payer walker, yeah.
So, with those two guys, he's just a backup. So, Settle's not going to re-sign here as a fourth defensive tackle behind Ioannidis, the third guy. He could go somewhere and start. He might be able to get starters money.
I think he's legit good. So, my strategy, by the way, before this year, would have been to trade one of the other guys, pay Tim Settle, kind of that compromise deal, right? That in-between deal, kind of like what you did for Matt Ioannidis, and now you've got a guy where there's not that much of a drop-off. You've got him at an affordable deal that's good for the player, good for the team, and then maybe gotten a nice, you know, maybe a second-round pick or something else, spin one of the dudes like Daron Payne, who, as you said, who I like. There's nothing wrong with Daron Payne. He's a really good player, but I'm probably not going to be able to sign him and Terry McLaurin and Montez Sweat and Chase Young and a quarterback and everybody else. So you're from a position of strength there. Part of your strength is good depth. I would have tried to keep Tim Settle, but it may be too late.
I would trade Payne this offseason and re-sign Settle for about a third of what Payne's going to get. Payne's going to be in that Allen range whenever he gets
14,
paid.
15, 16?
Higher
More?
Than that.
18?
I mean, Allen got 17 and a half or whatever per year, I think it was. Payne and him are pretty comparable. Payne was drafted a few picks sooner. Allen just had his best year where he kind of left Payne in the dust in terms of being a pass rusher. But before that, they were somewhat similar. I've always liked Allen a little bit more. I thought he was just a more complete player in terms of run stuffing and playing the pass and collapsing the pocket. But I could definitely see you get drafted later. You're coming off of being a first-round pick. You've played at a really high level. Allen hadn't been a Pro Bowler when he got that money. So he's going to get paid. I would trade him as part of a quarterback package, perhaps, with draft picks. Or if not, maybe you trade him for a pick or two or something like that. And then I would try to re-sign Settle, who, by the way, was not nearly as good this year as he was last year.
Last year had a whisper quiet 5.5 sacks, I believe.
He was really good last season. Didn't play as much this season. I mean, there were games where, if you go back, he played, I think his season high was playing over 40% of the snaps against Tampa and Carolina in weeks 10 and 11. Both wins, by the way. But for the most part, he was in the low 20% or in the teens in terms of snap count this year. So it's just hard to impact games that way. Next guy on my list here, J.D. McKissic. It's easy to say, well, we can find a pass-catching running back. You're going to find a guy as productive and good as he's been. He has been fantastic as a role player. Legitimately excellent in the role they carved out for him the last 2 years. It's a hard thing to replace what he's given you. I would re-sign him in a heartbeat. I would say that's a must for them.
It's easy to say, you're right, find another one. I'd like to find another one. I'd also like to re-sign J.D. McKissic.
How many are better? I mean, I know before he got hurt, he was the leader, maybe second behind Kamara, something like that, in catches at the position over the last 2 years.
I mean, it kills you when he's hurt, right? And small running backs, that's what happens to them. They get hurt. So you're tempted to use him more. I mean, see Chris Thompson as the other prime example in recent Redskins, WFT, whatever we're calling them, Commander Memory, where he's so productive. Why don't we use him more? Well, that's why. He wears down, he gets hit, he gets hurt, etc. But I'd have an army of guys like J.D. McKissic. That's what I look for. I look for that. I look for the scat back. I look for guys that can create matchup problems, especially in the pass game. I don't want him to hold up and thump between the tackles. I want more of J.D. McKissic. So, yeah, I'd resign him. You probably have to give him a raise, but I'd bring him back.
He definitely is deserving of a raise. If you're just joining us on Grant and Danny, we're running through the list of free agents. These are unrestricted free agents this offseason who can walk and go sign elsewhere. Everyone's talked about Brandon Scherff, who's likely to leave, hopefully. They don't tag him a third time or extend him at $18 million a year or something crazy like that at the guard position. So we got Tim Settle. We got J.D. McKissic. Bobby McCain had two picks in the final game of the season against the Giants in Week 18, led the team with three interceptions. That's not to say that you can't easily replace him. I think there are other safeties like him out there. But you'd be creating a hole where you're already fairly thin in the secondary. I'd be more inclined. He's not going to break the bench.
Yeah, I don't think it costs you that much.
Just give him whatever it takes. Keep him around. He knows the defense. And it's one thing you don't have to worry about.
Good depth signing there, right? Best case scenario, he doesn't have to play all that often, to be honest with you, right? You get Cam Curl, maybe Landon Collins is back comfortable. Otherwise, he starts opposite Cam Curl. I don't know how that's going to go.
He's not going to play safety where Bobby McCain plays. That's why Bobby McCain played so much this year.
I suppose.
Landon Collins can't play that position.
I'd love to, quote, to do better, but again, sometimes you can't throw $20 million at every position.
DeAndre Carter's a UFA. They signed him for nothing on a one-year deal to bring him in here before camp. As a return man, kind of a roster hopeful, long shot. Let's see if he makes the team. He ended up being one of the best return players in the league on special teams, and he was an asset as a wide receiver. To me, that's a slam dunk. Again, doesn't cost a lot. I'm not telling you he's got to be your fourth wide receiver or anything like that, but they should unequivocally already be talking to DeAndre Carter and try to get something in place at, you know, close to $1 million, a little over $1 million a year, something like that.
Same deal. As a returner, yes, 100%. I'd like to bring him back. My hope would be I do well enough at the position that I don't need him to be sort of a thrown-in option.
If he runs a route for you next year, fine.
Exactly.
You saw he could do it a little bit.
Yeah.
Speaking of wide receivers, Adam Humphries is a UFA. Now, I think they drafted Dax Milne to be Adam Humphries in a year or two. I don't know if Dax Milne's ready to do that or not. I would have no problem bringing Humphries back. Again, not going to break the bank. And a guy, he made huge catches for them. People can look at his numbers.
Is it third down in the fourth quarter? Yeah. Guess where it's going.
Well, I don't know. We probably ended up, I'm just guessing, at like 38 or 40 catches or something. Adam Humphries, if you just say these are the 15 biggest catches of the year, he might have made six or seven of them. And McLaurin might have made almost all the other ones. Maybe one from Cam Sims sprinkled in there. I want to keep him around. Speaking of which, Cam Sims is a free agent. What do we think there?
Again, I don't know that that one's going to break the bank. I would keep him for teams purposes, and he's a good depth player, wide receiver. But if I've got to go above a threshold, a couple million bucks here or there, I'd rather not. I'd rather not do that dance anymore. I really want to upgrade that position this offseason.
There's a lot of guys, though, like Cam Sims, where you'd say, I've developed some time, some effort, some energy. I've put some resources into them, and they're starting to show when they get opportunities that they can play a little bit. Here's another interesting one. Cornelius Lucas has been awesome.
This is the one that I would make a priority on signing.
Lucas started at left tackle last season, started at right tackle pretty frequently because Sam Cosmi was unable to stay on the field at right tackle. You have Leno re-upped. You have your starting right tackle, presumably in Cosmi, although I now have some questions about durability going into his sophomore season. But it seems to me like Lucas is the perfect third swing tackle. The problem is, if you're him or his agent, I'd like to think you can go show some of that film and get yourself a starting tackle job. So you might have to pay a little bit, but the third tackle position in this league is vital. You absolutely have to have a guy you trust who can play left or right.
He's my new Ty Nsekhe, right? And you're right. He may go get a starting job somewhere, right? You may have what happened, why am I blanking on his name? Left tackle came from Chicago, Charles Leno. You might have that happen if he hits the open market. But I would absolutely try to bring back that third tackle, especially given what happened in year one to Cosmi. But you're 100% right. There are a couple of positions where key backups, I think, are integral. I think that's one.
Bunch of guys that we don't need to spend a lot of time on, but just either went into the season where there were big plans for them. You got to fill the void. Ryan Fitzpatrick, John Bostic, Danny Johnson, Ricky Seals-Jones I thought was awesome. I'm quite sure they're going to bring him back because I like him in the role they have him in as an athletic tight end. To pair with John Bates behind Logan Thomas. Mayo and Norris, the inside linebackers, and a special teams players, and then Troy Apke, speaking of teams. If you're a great player on their special teams unit, by the way, you're a free agent. So people can kind of be cynical or sneer at this if they want to, but I mean, there are a ton of blue-collar worker bee types. This is the core of a team that is in this free agency pile, and if they all walk, they're not going to, but my point would be you'd have a lot of work to do. But I would make – I'm letting Sheriff walk. I would trade Payne and re-sign Settle. I think they probably will just let Settle walk as well. Guys like Cam Sims, Cornelius Lucas, J.D. McKissic, Bobby McCain, Adam Humphries, DeAndre Carter, Joey Sly, who finished the year strong at kicker. I'm making a real effort to bring all those guys back.
Yeah, $30 million plus dollars is walking out the door for me with Sheriff Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald, goodness, I'm sure that's a person. Fitzpatrick and Bostic. Those three guys are gone for me. And the other guys, you know, as the cap goes up, small raises, they'll be back for me because they know my program. Unless there's some sort of underlying thing that I don't know about where they didn't get along and were bad in meetings or something like that. But they seem to all be guys that are pulling the rope in the right direction.
Mark Rippon was the quarterback of the 91 Redskins team that we've been celebrating all day long on the 30th anniversary of their Super Bowl win. He's going to join us in 20 minutes coming up at 6 o'clock. Next, a couple things I want to do, Danny. Number one, a crazy stat on the Wizards finding a way to lose a game they led by 7 with 11 seconds left and led by 35 at one point last night. Plus, a change coming to the SATs that I think is going to make Danny Ruye kind of sad.
Ooh.
Tell you about it next, right here on The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T, or download the List app on the App Store today.
Danny, SAT tests will be all online by 2024.
That's crazy.
No more pencil and Scantron, no more bubbling in.
That sucks,
just
man.
Just so. Does it, though?
Yeah, everybody should go through that. Everyone should go to a strange high school and not know where to go and sit down on a Saturday and stress over it and use your number two pencil and bubble in the Scantron, man.
It's a lock. You took the SATs when they went up to 1,600, right? Or 1,800?
16, yeah. So what's happened is what 16 then went back up to 24, then it went back down to 16.
It's not 16 now.
I think it's 16 again.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I was a 2,400 guy. I didn't get a 2,400, but the SAT was out of 2,400. I got to tell people I got a 1,600 on my SAT, and they're like, wow. And I'm like, out of 2,400.
Out of 2,400.
No, I did a little better than that, actually. Your boy crushed one of the sections. Crushed.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you remember your score?
So it was three sections of 800. It was math, writing, and what was the other one? There was a third one.
Because it was simply basically English, verbal, and math. And they added that writing section for you guys.
Okay, so I got an 800 on the writing section.
You got an 800 in writing?
800, perfect score, pummeled it, absolutely destroyed it, steamed up. For my, I don't remember exactly, it was 18-something what I got on my SAT. It was not particularly great. So it tells you the other sections didn't go all that well.
Gotcha.
The test, just too long. That's the whole point.
That's part of the grind, dude.
But to go full virtual, I want you to have to go sharpen that pencil.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That experience, that's worth something to me.
You wonder when you hand in the Scantron, like, did I bubble that in enough? Did I go outside the line too much on that little circle there? But yeah, they're going fully electronic.
I hate that.
I think I'm in on it.
I mean, I get it. The world's changed.
Yeah, technology,
you know, we know
and
more.
Efficiency.
I fully understand that. But like, is there cheating possible now? If you're doing the whole thing online, like
probably you have the same amount that there was before.
You don't think? Nobody's monitoring you. You're just sitting there at home on your computer.
Guy, I'm not saying you're doing it at home. I'm just saying you're doing it on. You probably get on a computer at the classroom.
At a facility. I see.
I don't think anybody's doing the SATs next to their parents on their couch in their living room.
Thought it was like one of those like take home exams with on the honor
system.
I'll
bet you're not getting an open book take home. I think you're sitting in a room, just like we did. You're driving to some random high school.
Yeah.
I'm going to like Walker Grant Middle School or something random in Fredericksburg. I'm driving 30 minutes on Route 3. I'm sitting down just to add to the anxiety. God forbid they let me go in my normal hallways and my normal classroom.
Yeah, which way is the auditorium?
I think that's how it works.
Did you guys have the SAT 2s, those achievement tests and individual subjects, or they had gotten rid of those? But
gone. What we had that you didn't have was called SOLs.
I've been SOL before.
We all have.
Yeah.
Standards of learning. Teachers, I believe, they might have changed their mind. Teachers despise these because it took away their creativity in a lot of ways. You had to teach to this SOL. And it was a way to mandate, like, across Virginia, whatever states did it.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia's doing great.
Younger.
You had to teach to this thing. So it's like, these are the 100 things kids have to know for this test. So, like, our teachers would put up on the board at the beginning of every day, today we're learning SOL 4.6, 4.7, 4.8.
You're like, that's fun.
And then you go back and you just, like, basically cram for the exam right before SOLs. But the whole semester, the whole year was a buildup to the standard of learning tests. Same thing as like an SAT in a lot of ways.
Uh-huh.
It was like writing, math, and maybe reading comprehension was the other. I don't really remember.
So I was in a, I mean, they're basically like, hey, you got to get over 600 on these SAT 2s. Find some subject that you like. See if you can test over 600 because it was out of 800. It was one section. And then colleges will like you. That's all they told us. Like, okay. So I tried the biology one. I got like a 4-something after my freshman year. Had no chance. It was like, we didn't talk about any of this crap. I don't know what this is. I've heard the word mitochondria, but I don't know the context.
Do you even have, I mean, coming from St. Albans, do you even have to apply for colleges? Don't they just say, come on in?
Oh, no. Well, for some of my classmates, the old 1600 SAT guys that are legacies, right. Where there's a building with their same last name on there.
Right.
Yeah, they were fine.
A couple of those people probably didn't even have to apply. They're just like, you may have heard of my parents.
Yes, it's Smithers, and I'm that one there. And like, there's a picture of his dad.
Right.
Well, for me, old 1330 and a 3.0, I was 71st out of 75 in my class. They were not impressed with mine. But I took the chemistry SAT 2 because, like, I got to find two that I'm good at. I'm not really good at anything. I crushed the chemistry one.
Attaboy.
Out of nowhere.
I think that was my least favorite
out
class.
Out of nowhere.
Junior year, we did chemistry.
You sleep on Avogadro's number.
You're 100% right.
6.023 times 10 to the 23rd.
I think that was my least favorite class in school. I hated chem class.
So hard.
Hated it. But the next time I see a periodic table will be too soon. I don't care about that at all.
Did you have to memorize it? Remember memorizing that thing?
Yeah, you had to memorize it. There were just so much.
I'm sure I need to know that PB is lead. I'm sure that's important.
It's a combination of math and science. No, thank you. When does this class end? Oh, I hated chemistry. Hated it.
So hard.
Mark Rippon, more fun to talk about him. Quarterback of the 91 Super Bowl team. We are celebrating them today. 30 years ago, they won the Super Bowl. He will finish off what's been an awesome day of guests. We talked to Mark Schlereth, Joe Jacoby, Frank Herzog. Rippon, QB of the squad, joins us next on G&D right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Replaced by Irvin, and he's the lone running back. Rippon is back to throw it. Going deep. Touchdown, Redskins, Clark. From 30 yards away, it's Rippon.
stretch run of Grant and Danny on the Fan. We've got a Caps power play coming your way before we get out of here this evening. They are back in action at home tonight. But as you know, we've been spending much of the day on this 30th anniversary of the 91 Redskins team, maybe the best NFL team ever. And that's not just saying something foolish. I mean, statistically, there's a case to be made, and some publications have made that case over the years. It's been 30 years since they won the Super Bowl in January of 92, and the quarterback of that team, a multi-time Pro Bowler, and the MVP of that Super Bowl. What better way to wind the day down? This celebration, so many dignitaries and celebrities and guests from that club on. Mark Rippon joins us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Mark, welcome back via the radio to D.C. How are you?
Grant and Danny, how are you guys doing today? Absolutely spectacular. Great that we're honoring all these guys, special group of guys led by our Hall of Fame head coach, Joe Gibbs, and just, wow, just didn't seem like 30 years, so time does fly, and I wish we had a few more of those Hoist and Lombardi trophies like we did on that evening of January 26, 1992.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Does it seem like it's been 30 years? It doesn't for me. I mean, I was 12 when it happened, and it's still, you know, some of my greatest memories. The most joy I felt was when you guys were up 24-0 in the third quarter on the Bills and just ran roughshod over everybody during the lead-up. Does it seem like it's been 30 years?
Not one bit. It's kind of surreal almost, you know, when you think about it. And, you know, we celebrate the 10th year, the 20 year, now it's 25 years, now it's 30 years. It's like, wow, this has gone by fast. And one of the great things about, you know, those 30 years is that I've had the opportunity to come back out to D.C. and play in a charitable event for my foundation and the Maryland Special Olympics. And we get 40 to 50 of our old guys come back to that event and participate. And so it's good to see the old faces of guys that played before me and, you know, kind of paved the way for myself as those guys that played in that game on January 26th. And then to see the guys that were part of three Super Bowls, you know, the 82 team, the 86, 87 team, and the 91, 92 team. Special group of guys, very fortunate and blessed to have had the opportunity to be their leader that year. And what a year it was.
Mark, you guys blew everybody out just about. I mean, the average margin was a 16-point win. We've talked today about the fact that that's the best scoring margin points scored and allowed for any team ever. But there were times when you had to be great late in games. You had a couple fourth-quarter comebacks that year and five game-winning drives. I'm curious if you were to describe the offense, though, because, you know, attempts-wise, you didn't throw the ball a ton compared to, like, today, but it was so vertical. There were so many big plays. You led the league in yards per completion and adjusted net yards per attempt, which is now, like, one of the new fancy stats that everyone's trying to chase. I'm curious, like, how would you describe that offense schematically, so to speak, and your role in it?
Well, let's just face it. As a football organization, as a team, we're only as good as the guys up front, both defensively on the football and offensively on the offensive line, defensive line. I mean, those guys on our defensive line, whether it be Charles and Timmy Johnson and Fred Stokes and Eric Williams and Jumpy Gathers and then our linebacking core, it makes it a lot easier when you have guys like that for our linebacking core, Kurt McVeigh, Andre Collins, Wilbur Marshall, Monty Coleman, and then our secondary to make plays with the pressure that they put on was unbelievable. And then we were as good and I was as good as our offensive line was. And our offensive line was the best. And throwing Donnie Warren in there, too, because he really wasn't, a Kelsey that they have nowadays playing tight end. But he was instrumental in everything that we did and had. And so it was a pretty impressive group of guys there on the front. And then to have the talent that we had, Ernest Biner, Ricky Irvins, Gerald Riggs, Brian Mitchell, and then Gary Clark and Art Monk and Ricky Sanders. And it was just a unique group and it was special. And that's the other thing I'd like to lead into too, because not only were we good on both sides of football offensively and defensively, but Joe Gibbs was probably unorthodox as any other coach was, is give as much time during the practice to special teams as we did our offense and defense. And that's another reason why we were successful. And we only had two or three or four games that really came down to the end. The Houston Oilers game, basically, and then we went up to, I think, the most important game or the biggest game for us that year, even though we started out 11-0, was we jumped into playing the New York Giants at the Meadowlands, up in the Meadowlands, and hadn't beat them in six previous games. And so to go up to the Meadowlands and beat them in the Meadowlands, I think was unbelievable. And it was, I think, probably a telltale thing to us, say, hey, we kind of got through one of the crutches that we had in our history in the last 3 years, and able to beat them up there. And the way we did it, with a big throw to Gary Clark, you know, over Everson Walls, and then to kind of run the tables in the playoffs and then the Super Bowl was, I think the toughest skit that we had in the Super Bowl was the practice we had on Thursday. I mean, that was as intense as any I've been. I turned my ankle that practice. I didn't even know if I was going to play in the game that Sunday. That's how intense that practice was. And Joe Gibbs is about two plays away from calling the practice off because of the intensity that we had. And lo and behold, that last play, and then he finally did cut the rest of the practice off. But it was a great group of guys. I look at the photo and of all those characters and the individuals and just say how fortunate we were. And that connection that we had to, not only just to our what we did on during the off season and during the season as players and families, but also that connection we had with our fan base was second to none.
Mark Rippon here with us on Grant and Danny. Mark, you may have already answered the question about that Giants game, because you know they were the bullies, right? They'd won the previous year and they were really, really good. And you guys have been good too. I just kind of want to know for you when it went from "Hey, we're good" to "Holy crap, we might be great."
Well, Joe said that we had our kind of a Zoom thing on Monday, the 24th, and we had like 48 of our 53 guys there, along with Coach Gibbs and Charlie Casser. And he said all the coaching staff knew going into that season, even though we were 0-3, I think, or 0-4 during the preseason. And Mr. Cook was up in arms about, is this team going to be worth a darn? You know, can this quarterback lead them to where they want to go? And again, I'll have to say, in all honesty, that's not a lot of pressure, but that's how we were judged as a quarterback in Washington, D.C. It's not by winning games. It's not by winning playoff games. It's winning Super Bowls, let's face it. And so even though we were 0-3 and we're so vanilla during the preseason, Joe Gibbs felt that this was a team that had a bunch of smart guys that had been there before, understood what we were trying to do. And all we had to do is kind of go out and take the game plan and stay healthy. I think staying healthy is a big part of it, too, is you don't have any big injuries in your offensive line or defensive line and skilled people, then I think you got a good chance. And all those things came together, and lo and behold, look what happened.
Mark Rippon's with us on Grant and Danny. 30 years ago today, Washington won the Super Bowl. Mark, what do you remember about the day celebrating thereafter, the parade? What stands out?
Well, to me, it was celebrating with your teammates and have an opportunity. I had 56 family members there. So after
at the
we
game, you had 56?
At the game, yeah.
Wow.
I don't think my contract covered what it was to get tickets and air flights and all that for family members and friends, you know. But the thing that was so great about it was celebrating with the guys in the locker room. I mean, it was, you know, like I said, it's surreal, you know, when you think about it, and my family being there, being a part of it, and then heading back and celebrating with them. I rented out to St. Paul's Cathedral. I don't know if you guys know this, but St. Paul's Cathedral there in St. Paul, Minnesota, across from the cathedral was a nun's retreat house, and they kind of use it as a bed and breakfast. And I took every room they had, and all 56 of my friends and relatives stayed there. So we end up spending most of the evening into the early hours of the morning. I remember having to get up I didn't go to sleep. So I had to go do a press conference with the NFL at like 6 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
After having a couple of adult beverages of choice, you know, and going there and then jumping on an airplane with my two kids and my wife Annette at the time and traveling out to the Pro Bowl. So we actually didn't even get to participate in the parade, you know, which was so much fun, you know, for all the players that were on that team. But myself and Gary and there's like four or five others of us were on airplane with a lot of those Buffalo Bills and other players that were going to Honolulu to play in the Pro Bowl.
You mentioned that Bills team, Mark. They were really good. That was a really, really good team, and it looked like you know, it was you guys were having like a 1AA scrimmage or something like that for through three quarters before you took the foot off the gas. What do you remember day of? What do you remember in terms of prep? We've heard a lot about that Thursday practice, but in terms of game plan, in terms of how we're going to attack them, I mean, you're Bruce Smith and their offense and all these high-profile guys. What do you remember about kind of game plan stuff and the diagnosis of this is how we're going to beat them?
Well, I'll tell you about that two-week window, which is great. Joe Gibbs says, hey, by Thursday of the first week, you're going to have all your, you know, credentials, everything you need for getting your people that you want to the game all done. Because once we meet on Friday, put in the game plan, study it, go over it Saturday, fly out Sunday. When we get to Minneapolis, we're ready to go. And I think that's one of the great things about him that a lot of people don't know is not only the preparation and the incredible coach that he was and mentor he was to a lot of us and friend he was to a lot of us, but how he his attention to detail on things like that, and then to have the understanding that, you know, Super Bowls are for corporate America to come have a big party, and you're supposed to go keep ourselves off, you know, the beaten path and put on a good show on Sunday. So he felt one of the best things to do as we were staying downtown at the Radisson was to get out of town, get about 40, 50 miles, and we're driving in the snow and buses, and we're all wondering, are we in Wisconsin, Canada, where the heck are we going, you know? And he put us about 50 miles outside of town. It was so comforting and relaxing that there wasn't a lot going on, you know. It was just us, the players, and, you know, and the staff there at the hotel, and coaches and trainers and all the equipment people that were part of the organization that were there. And so it was very relaxing. But then it was, you know, time to take a look at the film on that Saturday night, last little bit of film that we're going to need to look at to go over our checks and all the things that we put in for the week and make sure that we're on the same page, which everyone was. And we had a players-only meeting again that was, I think, just talked about, you know, what we did and how we got here and talked about, you know, all the sacrifices that we did in the offseason to get to this point. And then we had the Buffalo Bills defensive line coach call our hogs a bunch of fat, out of shape, men that didn't sit very well. And I think they had a little vendetta that they wanted to come out and show them, hey, this is who we are and this is what we do. And certainly enough, they did. And then I can remember getting up about 12 o'clock and then every hour from then till about 6 or 5:30, 6 o'clock. And of course, as the game was like 6 at night, you know, Madden and Summerall were calling the game, and man, what an incredible person John Madden was. But, you know, I remember getting up every hour from like 1, 2, 3, 4, finally 6 o'clock. I went down and said, gosh, I'm up, you know, I'm wired and I'm ready to go. And I go downstairs thinking I'm going to be the only one maybe to grab a coffee. And there's like 10 other players there with the same situation. You know, I think the only ones that weren't were the guys that played in the Super Bowls before. So a lot of us were there. I remember Eric Williams and Chip Lowmiller and myself decided to jump into a cab a little early because we didn't have any obligations other than our pregame meal, which is like at 10 o'clock. And we went to that and we had like 2 or 3 or 4 hours before we were jumping on a bus. But we took a taxi in to get there early and just kind of get acclimated to what was going on. And I took a nap in the trainer's room till most of the players got there, you know. And then it was just a matter of going out and doing what we were taught all week and understanding that, hey, you know, as a player, and, you know, my role is important, and I have to play well in a game that matters the most. And unfortunately for Buffalo and those four Super Bowls, they had so many superstars, so many great players, you know, that played so well throughout their careers, Hall of Fame guys that were incredible but didn't play the best when it mattered the most. And we caught them on a day that they didn't play very well, and also on a day that we were pretty set on what we were trying to do and trying to accomplish.
Mark Rippon got sacked all of 7 times in that season, 14
Amazing.
And 2, really, 14 and 1 in the competitive games before they rested some starters there at the end of the season. Could have been a 15 and 1 team to go along with some of the peripherals that say it was one of the best teams ever. I looked up the games log, and I've got it in front of me here, and I'm just curious if you remember this day any different than any others. It's got to be the most prolific day in the history of passing for the organization. You went for 442 and 6 touchdowns against the Falcons in early November of that season. I'm wondering, I mean, because, you know, it's normally ho-hum. You're going to get to the stadium. You're going to go 2 or 3 touchdowns. 440 and 6. What was that about?
Well, I'm also wondering. I'm imagining that I think you guys probably each could have thrown a touchdown or two that game too. I mean, they had both their starting corners out. They had Deion Sanders wasn't playing. And I think Eric McIntyre wasn't playing. So they had both their starting corners out, but they played the same pressure defense. And so, you know, Jerry Glanville was upset. But we have checks in our game where if they've got too many guys in the box, we check to a pass. And a lot of times we check to just a quick hitch route. But when it's a quick hitch route, whether it be Art or Gary runs a five-yard hook and they're playing off, that's what we have. But when they're playing press coverage with no deep help, it turns into a go route. So three of my six touchdowns, I think, were just on check with me's where we couldn't run it. So I checked to an audible, and the audible was to hit Gary on a go route or Art or Ricky or whoever. And that's just the hand that was dealt to us. It wasn't our fault. It was their fault for still pressuring with guys that couldn't cover me, you know.
And then you guys played them again in the playoffs. I mean, it was a closer game. It wasn't, you know, close. Well, you guys won by 17.
The thing I remember, though, it wasn't close, but it was the seat cushion game. But what I remember is that late in the fourth quarter, we had like 2 minutes, 3 minutes left, and there was one drive left. And Joe came to me and says, hey, do you want to go back in? And I'm going, go back in. He goes, yeah, I think the record was six, so he wanted me to break the record of seven touchdowns in a game. And I said, you know, just to myself, I said, no, thank you. I appreciate that. But I just kind of knew that we might face these guys because they're pretty good, you know. And sure enough, we did. But just out of, you know, caring into your opponent and knowing that you don't ever want to try to rub it in their face and just for a record to get a record because that could come back to haunt you down the stretch as a body bag game did the year before. We got killed by Philadelphia, literally, guys packed off the field, and then came back and beat them at their own house. It can't happen. So didn't want to give them any extra material. So I said no, and then sure enough, we did play them. And it was a closer game, but we still, you know, kind of ran away with it at the end, and it's just testimony to a great group of guys.
So was that was the Sonny record? Was that touchdowns or yards that you were trying? Well, you would have broken
touchdowns.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow.
Good little footnote in that game. Some guy named Favre came in garbage time and threw two picks. Was 0-for-4 with two interceptions. He would go on to slightly better things.
Yeah, I think Billy Joe got hurt. So yeah. It was kind of a, you know, just kind of a guy came in and said, you know, I'm on my farewell tour. So.
Mark, this is such a treat, man. Really appreciate you taking the time and hanging out with us and reminisce a little bit. It's been fun to talk about all day long, and this is a great way to cap it off, buddy. Thank you.
Guys, I hope you had a great time with all the other players, and I know that each and every one of them still to this day thanks not only our media and the connection we had with our fans, but also we appreciate each other and all the things that we did both on and off the field. And it was an era that I don't know if you guys know, but it was before free agency. And So it was pretty cool because we did things and stayed together for a long period of time. And then free agency hit and players were kind of going here and there, and the game kind of changed after that.
Certainly has, and a lot of things have changed around here. We want to get back to being able to talk to people about big playoff games, but
absolutely. And then I'm pretty excited, even though I don't think they never ever should have changed the name from the Redskins to whatever it's going to be on 2/2/22. But I'm kind of excited to see what it's going to be. I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, we're all jacked up. We've been waiting a long time. Have you been following it all or not really?
Oh yeah. I'm pretty. We're actually part of the there's a bunch of us that are part of, not a bunch, but there's about six of us or seven of us that are part of the naming or looking at the different names. And a lot of us really like the Red Wolves, but that's not going to be. But yeah, whatever it's going to be, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a new dimension here and an opportunity for, you know, the old to blend with the new and remember our past and honor our past and then also move towards the future and what the future has in store for all of us.
Good deal. Yeah, it is exciting. Good time to turn the page. Mark, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate it.
Cheers, guys. Thanks.
See you, bud.
Mark Rippon with us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Great way to end a fun look back at the 1991 Super Bowl team today. If you missed any of those interviews, Frank Herzog, the voice of that team, Mark Schlereth or Joe Jacoby, offensive lineman on that group, Jacoby, who won all three of the Super Bowls here in Washington, should be a Hall of Famer, or Rippon. TheFanDC.com, GrantandDanny.com/audio is where you can find those conversations. part of it is depressing, frankly, that we have to look back 30 years ago.
30 years.
Because it's not just a Super Bowl. Like, you're not guaranteed a Super Bowl. But that was the last time, consistently, for 2-3 straight seasons, the team was even playoff relevant. You're talking about 30 years. And that part of it is tough to stomach. But today should just be about celebrating that day and that team. But if you are a young fan, hopefully this at least lets you know it can happen here. It is possible.
It did.
It did before. Now, it was a different ownership group. A lot of things were different.
Yeah, here's what it is for me. And it's not just doing an anniversary show, right? Like, it's in San Francisco doing radio there. You could do an anniversary in 2019 of the 88, 89 team, et cetera. That's normal. It's the fact that you don't have to walk over much to get there. It's a barren wasteland since then. There's been absolutely nothing to toot about since that time.
Caps getting ready for action. Time for a power play.
It's time for Granddaddy's Power Play. Presented by American Standard Heating and Cooling and MidAtlanticComfort.com.
Sharks at the Capitals. They'll drop the puck at 7 o'clock tonight, Capital One Arena. Caps coming off of a shutout loss at the hands of the Golden Knights, 1-0. They are looking for just their second victory here in the last four games. Need to play a cleaner game of hockey on the offensive end where they got beat by a hot goaltender in Robin Leonard last time out.
San Jose has lost 4 of 5, including 2 straight, 7-1 drubbing a couple nights ago at the hands of the Tampa Bay Lightning. They are aggressively okay. Great opportunity to, I don't know, get a couple points.
Pre-game starts in about 20 minutes. That is your Caps Power Play.
Brent and Danny's Power Play, presented by American Standard Heating and Cooling and MidAtlanticComfort.com.
As always, thanks to Darris and Ryan for their work on the production. For Danny, Grant saying so long. Tomorrow's show is going to be a lot of fun. We're excited about it. We're going to be talking to Marshall Faulk at 5 o'clock. And Charles Davis joins the show to break down championship weekend, one of our favorite guests, at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Plus, Caps fans, John Carlson back on the show tomorrow for his weekly appointment. See you at 2 o'clock tomorrow. GND saying so long.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.